Hi, I'm Malcolm Hawker, and this is the CDO Matters podcast, the show where I dig deep into the strategic insights, best practices, and practical recommendations that modern data leaders need to help their organizations become truly data-driven. Tune in for thought-provoking discussions with data, IT, and business leaders to learn about the CDO matters that are top of mind for today's chief data officers. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good whatever time it is, wherever you are in the world. I am Malcolm Hawker. I am the host of the CDO Matters podcast. Thank you for joining us today. We are going to talk about AI value creation. I'm thrilled to be joined today by Dr. Michael Brox, who is the chief scientist of Accelerid. And you are the, Accelerid is the technology provider to University of Maryland, correct?
University of Maryland Global Campus, yes. But it's not just University of Maryland Global Campus. We serve various universities. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. So you are, your background is economics, I believe, but you have recently co-authored a widely published book, The Secrets of AI Value Creation, correct?
That's true. Yeah. So apparently you saw it.
Well, okay. So I met you 2 weeks ago. Two and a half weeks ago at the CDOIQ event in Boston. And I was lucky enough to stick around to the end. Michael gave the last presentation of the conference, and it was most certainly one of the best, if not the best. It was one of the best presentations of the conference. Because it gave some kind of fresh perspectives about AI, particularly related to AI value creation. And we're gonna talk about that today, because there's a lot of people, Michael, I'm sure you've been hearing this. There's a lot of people talking about, oh, there's no ROI, right? The last number I heard was it's $600 billion being spent on Gen AI and like maybe $100 billion in value. And a lot of people saying, hey, is this worth it? Have you heard some of the same rumors floating around recently?
I haven't read any numbers.
Oh, yet,
but okay. I'm with you on it.
Meaning, are you dubious of the benefit, or are you optimistic the benefits will be there eventually?
I mean, it's going to be eventually. As soon as we, rephrase our expectations towards the dictante, towards the technology. After we see what we can actually expect, what are the real capabilities of the technology, we can actually make money with it.
So are you saying that there is a knowledge gap then with a lot of practitioners, a lot of CDOs today who really don't necessarily understand the capabilities of the technology, or is it more about modifying our existing operating models, modifying our existing perspectives in order to extract the value from the technology? What are some of the real challenges here when it comes to value realization?
I would say both, but it's not necessarily the CDOs or, that are struggling to understand the technology. It's more about, businesses in total to not go after the shiny object and really have realistic expectations and not, there's so much hype around it, and that definitely creates a movement, which is a good thing. The challenge is that you need to take the learnings to really get to value creation, and then Gen AI is just one piece of AI, right? So when we talk about AI, it's way, way bigger, right? It's the newest one, which is cool and looks great, and you can create a green cat. But I haven't seen the big value from it yet, from green cats. Besides that, there is certainly value, and there's certainly money to be made. The question is how. And the newest, I like to follow Sequoia, and they're the big investors in the field, right? And they're talking about the same issue, right? It's the technology is there now, but how do you actually create value from it? And then, as you said, the value creation is way bigger, right? So this is just the technology piece. And now you need and that's, we talked about it at the conference and we talk about it in the book. It's about there's a, you know, many factors that create, you know, that are relevant for value creation, right? And we need to take a step back and not just talk about technology, because that's not the issue.
Well, what you rightfully point out in the book and the presentation is that AI is not new, right? I think sometimes I fall into this trap of thinking, oh, well, this is, we're in an early adopter phase, right? And it's in an early adopter phase, it's normal for there to be a disparity between the amount of investment going into something and the amount of value coming out of it. Like a lot of people are applying the internet as an analog and saying, well, in the early days of the internet, there was a lot of investment in infrastructure and systems, and a lot of the returns weren't there. But what you rightfully point out is this is not new, and this is not an early adopter phase we're in right now, arguably maybe more of a mature life cycle, correct?
You're right. Like we are pretty mature. I would say after, you know, however you define AI, you know, when you say it started in the 1950s, right? That's 75 years ago, right? Almost. So it's like, no, it's not new, right? It's way older than me. And I consider myself old. But it's like, you know, the challenges here, because we constantly give it new names. Every time we see some hype, we seem to throw everything overboard that we learned before and say, hey, you know, in the times of AI now, everything's different, right? You can forget everything you learned. If you don't know about AI, I know you see that on X and all the social media things. If you don't know about AI this year, you're going to be gone next year. You know, okay. So apparently the last 40 years that I learned in my life are worth nothing. But that's exactly the problem that, you know, when we started and I started thinking about the book and I talked to my mentors and now co-authors, and I was very lucky to have very experienced co-authors with me, managing vice president of Capital One, Nisha Paliwal, CIO of Premier Tech, Dr. William Beelard, and we have the CDO of Hewlett Packard and the CDO of CBS and the CDO of Starbucks and so many others. That were so kind and become industry contributors to the book and help us writing it because they like the concept. It's not like they started yesterday. You know, they are achievers in that field because they have been doing it for a long time. And they have done something right, apparently, because they wouldn't be where they are. So I was very lucky through the book and, you know, through my last decades of experience in industry and to, you know, separate between the successful AI achievers and the less successful ones and, you know, go through that journey. And then we were actually, you know, most of the things that we learned was that somehow everybody seems to be alone on that journey. Hmm. We don't really share the experiences, number one. Number two, is this partially right? Because we only share the successful experiences. And that's where we have the hype created, right? We have 10 cases where we tried projects and POCs and things, and one of them was successful. And we share that one, but we don't talk about the 9 failures. So if we don't know about the negatives, how can we learn to do it better, right? And that's something that we realized that there was no book that has that, you know, that points out all the mistakes on the journey. And then when we talk about those AI achievers, most of them, you know, when you really look at them, they started decades ago. They started last year and are an achiever this year. So it's like, we talk about John Deere and Coca-Cola and others, right? But they started at early 2000s or end of the 90s, right? John Deere collected GPS data for a long time, for over 2 decades, and now they have self-driving tractors. But they started that journey a long time ago, right? And that's like what we seem to forget is like there is a path to success. And it's a marathon. It's not a sprint. So you have to stay focused and be on that marathon. What we also learned is that marathon is not linear. It goes up and down and up and up. And so many of the successful people today, they had their failures. and experiences, including myself. I had many of them, like many failures, and I failed many times, but I always learned from it. I always analyzed and figured out, okay, what did I do wrong? And what we figured out eventually throughout that book, and by looking at it from a holistic perspective, that it's not the technology that drives the value. It's a piece of it that drives the value, but there's more elements to it. And when you think about the different elements, when you ask your engineer, you know, what is important to create value, you know, to have a stable pipeline, right? Or to have an API that is, you know, serving the answers and, you know, low latency, right? You go to the data scientist, highly accurate models. You go to the business person, you know, you have the right KPIs. You go to your data engineer, right? And it's like, yes, you have the, you know, the right data. And then you go to, you know, to the chief transformation officer. You know, you have everybody on board. And, you know, and you focus on, you know, people love the technology. And all of them are in their individual areas are all correct. And they're optimized towards it. But the problem is, if you don't have a holistic optimization, it's going to fail. And that's when, that's what you, what many learn. And I learned on that path the same way, right? Another way of looking at it, if I give you $5 million and say, hey, that's for your funding of your AI initiative. And you take $5 million and give it to AWS or, you know, Azure, you know, the value created is exactly zero. There's nothing done with it. You just invested in the technology, which is cool. You need it, right? But then you learn, wait, that something is missing, right? I need to focus a little bit on the algorithms, right? Yeah, okay, cool. Now you invest, you know, maybe you only $4 million in the technology and $1 million in the algorithms. You still fail. And then you realize, wait, I need to invest a little bit maybe in business, you know, business domain knowledge, some type of AI business consultant that understands how to apply it to business and where actually find the opportunities. And then you keep going, right? You invest then another million in data and data management, especially, and then you invest another million in transformation. And then you realize, wait, everything has now $1 million, all of those five, and you seem to create value. So what does it tell us? Like this example, that this formula we're talking about is not additive. You cannot compensate one with the other. So you cannot throw more money at, you know, at technology and expect that you don't need to do anything in transformation or change management or organization or psychology, however you want to call it, right? So it is that you need it all. And I think that's the mistake we make, because it's so broad, right? We are technologists and we're proud of it, which is good, right? My background is in business, so I really like the business part, and I had to learn the technology part. I'm not passionate about it, I'm honest. I really love the application to business and creating value, and I have to do the technology. I love statistics. But I'm not the best fan of the data management, right? Yeah. But I know I need to do that too, right? And there's like, but I have my favorites, right? I have my prioritization, and everybody does because they are so far apart, right? They're also like sometimes require different personalities, right? So I come from I'm a mathematician, right? I'm maybe more introverted. Right. And now I have to do transformation and talk to a lot of people that might not be part of my comfort zone. Right. And that's why we focus on one or two. And organizations, big organizations usually have, when we talk about silos for many, many years, right? Usually, you know, data silos, but those silos are around departments as well. Right. You have somebody that, you know, you have the CAO, does, you know, analytics. Then you have the CDO, does the data. And you have the chief transformation officer, the chief technology officer, and then you have all your BU unit heads, SVP of something. So, and then taking it all together, you have them all, So if the relationship for value creation would be additive, everybody would make money if they hire somebody in all those fields.
So I love this idea of the holistic piece, and I want to come back to those four key pillars. And I really want to drill down on the, kind of the Venn diagram that you shared in your presentation, which are the four key pillars that you're saying you need all four. And if you take one away, something will happen. But let's double back to one thing that you talked about, which is kind of some of the things that define these achievers, these AI achievers. And one thing I kept hearing over and over again was, okay, this has been a journey. There's been ups and downs. It's non-linear, right? It's not like everything is keep going up and to the right. There's been failures. There's been problems. There's been more failures than successes, which is natural in an R&D function. Yeah. Very natural in an R&D function. So that suggests to me that perseverance is a big key here. And it also suggests that a really, really short-term focus on immediate returns could do more harm than good. So how do these achievers go from I need returns in 6 months, I need ROI in 6 months, to how do they get over that into this idea of this being a multi-year journey where you probably have more failures than successes? How do they do that?
I mean, it seems like there is a common goal. When we look at all the AI pioneers and how they talk about AI, and they have done that for many years, right? We bring that up in the book. They seem to have a common vision, right? There's an overlap. They all describe AI very human-like. So they, you know, Elon Musk produces robots that look like humans, right? It's like there is some, you know, similarity. We also talk about robots in a way that they make human-like decisions or behave human-like, or they have human-like capabilities, right? So there seems to be a common final goal, number one. And number two, I think that many of those AI achievers have achieved value on the way. Mm-hmm. So although they had something they were striving towards, to some aspiration, they seem to have incremental value creation on many steps on that way. And that keeps them going. So that keeps them motivated. And we compare it to a marathon, right? So we have the final, you know, finish line in mind, but we keep running because we have little wins on the way, right? And I think that's a good way of looking at it, and a good learning from you know, many of those AI pioneers and achievers, and you know, and they go through kind of the same steps, right? Many of them go through a first phase of data-driven decision making, right? Getting their data together, and understanding the value of what they can do with data, to the point that they augment human decision making, right? They support human decision making, right, through the relevant insights. And then the next thing is they go towards exceeding human capabilities, right? Where it's, you know, where AI does something that humans can't do anymore. But it's the journey, and there's different steps in between and so on, right? But just looking at those three steps, they all seem to have gone through those.
Interesting. So it's not just a top down. It's not just this grandiose vision, and it's not just a bottom up. It's both. You've got kind of coming at it from the bottom, short term wins, grand vision, heaven both. That makes total sense to me. Let's go ahead.
And then when you analyze the potential of AI value creation, right? And we talked about it at the conference, and people always ask me, okay, where do I start? Right?
Good question.
I start with a use case catalog. Right. I started with my industry use case catalog and looked at the use cases and tried to figure out what's best for us. The interesting part here is that we talked about that we seem to forget everything that we learned, right? So when you go back in the 80s, right, we learned from Michael Porter in economics, and everybody who studied economics, business, and heard of Michael Porter, right? And one of the things he taught was that a competitive advantage is critical for value creation. And competitive advantage, by definition, is you have to do something better in your industry, right? You go against your industry to have an advantage, either through differentiation or pricing, or right? But you do something different. So when we look at use case catalogs, industry use case catalogs, they're really helping us to catch up and understand what the industry is doing and where we are right now and what they can do or what they're thinking about. And that most of those cases, you can already buy. You know, you go to Salesforce or you go to, you know, startups, and they, you know, they follow those use case, you know, use cases for an industry, because there's definitely a big audience, right? It definitely makes sense. It may be even cheaper to buy it than building it. Right. And on the other hand, if you start building something that's unique and gives you a competitive advantage, right, throughout your organization, wherever your strategy is, right, then you're gonna realize that this is where you actually create value for your organization, especially when you built it. Right. And then there's, when we talk about those, you know, how where do we start? Which one do we pick? Right. We need to understand what AI can actually do for us. And then how do we evaluate those use cases, right? If we now find something within our organization, there's two sides to it. First, I need to evaluate if it's actually value creation. Can that create value? And second, where do I look, right? So if we say, you know, there's no way which one we start with, but let's say we start with the evaluation, right? Figuring out if there's actually value behind something. Because having an idea, everybody has an idea. All right, we need a chatbot. What do you need the chatbot for?
Chatting.
That's exactly where we always talk about, like, this technology hype. And, you know, so, but if we start analyzing it and look at three dimensions, right? And those three dimensions are business opportunity. And that's already very hard to do and way more complex than people think. The second one is, and you talked about ROI at the beginning, the second one is feasibility. Can I actually do and achieve that opportunity, that business opportunity, what I just thought of? And number three, everybody seems to forget, or at least many seem to forget, it's the adoption, an adoption risk that you usually have. And then that's like where, because that comes at the end, we always seem to forget that piece. But how many dashboards have you built in as a data scientist, or, you know, now you're CDO or CDAO, but you started usually somewhere on the lower, and how many dashboards have you built that nobody used, right? And how many things have you built that just went into the nowhere, right? And that's like, we need to learn from that part, because that's a value, it's diminishing the value, right? You can be, and I always thought it, you know, I'm with the PhD and MBAs and all the degrees and coming from academia, right, going to industry, I thought I'm the smartest guy in the room. But I failed so many times. Like, wait. Maybe I'm not the smartest guy in the room. So what do I do wrong? And that's where I realized it's not about how smart I am. Certainly not. It's about how do you build something that has a business opportunity that I can actually achieve with the feasibility. And number three, how can I make it that actually people want it? How can I give people what they want? And I think from thinking from that perspective, you quickly realize that there are many things we have done. Maybe we focus on one or two of those, but seem to forget number three. And we can talk about examples here, right? We can talk about like business opportunity. I really like to bring up in the insurance industry an example, and we write about it in the book. That's insurance churn, right? So leaving the insurance company and going somewhere else, you know. And let's go to car insurance, right? They have like 20% churn rate. That means on average, every, you know, 5 years, people leave the insurance company. Now, if you think about it, you have $1 billion in premium, 20% churn rate, you know, you think you can save $200 million with an AI that does churn for you, right? And it sounds logic. Right.
The guess is the churn, you mean, like says this person's at risk of churning.
Yeah. So but that's not where it ends. Now, first of all, you know, the AI is not going to be 100% correct. Let's say it's between 80 and 90. Let's say it's 90, right? So you're already down to 180 million, right? Opportunity. But what do you do next? You have to do something about it. You know, just knowing who's going to leave is not helping you. So you have to take action. What is the action you would take?
Well, I'd probably deploy some sort of, you know, save type campaign, maybe hire a bunch of call center agents, maybe push it down to the individual, you know, whoever the agents are in that market and say, hey, your customer's about to churn out, call them.
Yeah. So let's say you have a call center, right?
Yeah.
You call your customer, and how many are going to pick up?
Today, probably very few.
Let's say a third. When you're lucky, it's a third.
Oh, you'd be lucky. Yeah.
And it's already down from 180 to 60 million. So, and what happens next? They pick up and you say who you are. How many are going to talk to you if they already know they're leaving or, you know,
Dissatisfied. They're dissatisfied with the product. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's say a third is actually talking to you. So from 60, you're down to 20 million. So, and then what are the two, they actually want to talk about the problem they're having. So what are the two problems they're usually having? It's the product or the price, right?
Yeah.
So you can't change the product because you only have one product as an insurance company usually. And now number two is the price, and it's a regulated pricing market, right? You can't just give them a 30% discount, at least not here in the US. And you know, you can give them a toaster for $30, but it doesn't really make up for the $3,000 you pay in insurance. So taking all that into account, there's nothing you can do about it. And the project's going to cost you $2 million because you have to call them, you have to build it, and all those other things, right? You just calculated $200 million. And now we get to $2 million in loss. How could that happen? Right? And that's like the business opportunity is not always how it looks, right? I have barely seen... You see that very often, that what we think it is, because we don't think it end to end, and really like the actions we take and all the risks on the way to really make it a business opportunity, it usually turns out to be way lower. So that's number one, that's the business opportunity side. And then the next one is the feasibility side. Right now I actually have to build what I just promised, right? And my favorite example here is always Siri, right? So you look at Siri, and I always ask people, okay, how many of you have Apple? Yeah, the hands go up, right? How many use Siri on a daily basis? You know, you see 2 out of 50 people still say something, right? Or 5. And how many people use it as the best friend, as your assistant that you use, and you don't need anybody else? And then everybody's hands go down. So, but that's what promised. That was the business opportunity that was created, right? And it doesn't catch up to what was the expectation that were created. But on the other hand, you have like Amazon that sells Amazon Echo, and you have 30% penetration rate in the US, and many people use Echo, but not as their best friend, you know, to say, hey, please switch on the light here and, you know, go on Spotify and play song B, right? But this is like what's feasible, right? So they never promised it to be your best friend and replace everybody else. I mean, I'm exaggerating, right? But it's like, it's the alignment of what is actually feasible to what the business opportunity is. And number three is, how many people do you impact and in which way, right? If I implement a use case within an organization that is supposed to implement 1,000 people and it changed dramatically how everybody's working, there's a huge risk, right? And that's number three, is where we always seem to forget, you know, you have to change how people work, right? Because you want them to use whatever you built, right? The challenge is, we need to think about it from a different perspective. Why would they want to use it?
Yeah.
Right. And that's where we also need to think about what we always forget. It's like, there's three stakeholders we usually have, and they can be more. I mean, there's a couple others, but in general, you have the organization itself and their shareholders, right? And we always try to focus on that. You know, that's the business opportunity part. Right? And they should be happy if I make them money. And then you have the customers of the organization. You try to, you know, create value for them, or at least not impact them negatively. And then we always forget the employees. And we always think, okay, yeah, we just tell them they have to do it. That's not usually how it works, right? You don't go and say, yeah, okay, here, marketing department, I just built your solution. Everybody has to use it now. Good luck. How many times has that worked? Especially when we think about, you know, dashboard technology, right? We have adoption rate of less than 30%, according to the numbers, right? But it's like 70% is done for nothing. So how can that be after 20 years, right? Since we have that technology. So, and then you think about those three factors and realize, wait, there is more to it, right? And then, okay, good. Now we know how to evaluate those use cases. And then the next step is like, where do we find them? Where do we find use cases? How do we start, right? And in general, like, there's, let's say, four areas we categorize roughly in the book. And there's certainly more or less, however you want to define it. But four that seem to be good to look at, because they have a different profile on those three value factors, right? So number one is like business process optimization, which is usually very simple, low-hanging fruit if you have business processes mapped and you have some standardization in your organization. Then, you know, there's a process, you have steps, you have actions, and you just try to optimize them a little bit. But in general, it's there's some value, right? Some business opportunity, low risk, right? And then you go and you do decision-making. And first you start with decision-making augmentation before you get to automation. And augmentation can have a huge opportunity already because you give something, insights to people that they haven't known. But with that, the risk increases, the feasibility and the adoption risk increases because you change what people do. And then everybody is scared of automation, right? So you need to make really clear that it's augmentation and not automation. And you need to make sure that people actually, you know, want to work with you. And you need to address that elephant in the room, right? It's really hard to do. And we usually don't, right? So we're just like, okay, we built something and then we expect people to use it, right? And that's the other thing, right? How many times when I thought I'm the smartest in the room, I built your solution, you know, fulfills all your needs. And I have them never asked them before if they actually want it or how it should look like, or, you know, just go there and say that here it is, right? So that usually doesn't work. And then if you try to automate things and that becomes more complex and complicated, especially from a feasibility and adoption perspective, right? From a feasibility perspective, before I just give you an insight that needs to be correct, but an insight and you make the decision. But here I take decisions. I make the decisions on behalf of humans, which has, you know, way more risk to it. And plus, what do you do with the humans then? So as soon as, you know, people always ask me, yeah, but what do we do then? And I said, yeah, don't fire them. Why not? And I was like, because then nobody else wants to work with you anymore on the topic of AI. You just fired 50 people right, and you have a 10,000 people organization. You're kind of dead in the water after that, right? Because everybody is scared. So it's like, you need to find a way of how do you partner with the technology in the long run. And you need to create trust. Trust is one of the most important topics for adoption. And then last but not least, AI products and services. And everybody wants to build products and services, but that's the hardest thing to do because it needs to be scalable. You need to have a product that actually fits the market needs perfectly, that you get, you know, interest from the market. And then you need to build more around it. You need to build the marketing, the sales, and so many things that if you're not familiar with it, you're going to struggle, right? And there are more pieces to it, right? Talking about security and you know, legal and other things that, you know, you need to think of if you build AI and products and services. But in general, I would say those are the things when we talk about the potential of value creation. So I know it was a very long answer for me.
Well, it was long enough to support a book. So, I mean, you know, obviously. It's interesting what you just described from the perspective of the feasibility of marketing and taking a product to, you know, taking a product to market. I would argue is why most data monetization efforts fail, is because data people don't do that stuff very well. They don't know marketing. They don't know product management. They don't know competitive analysis. They don't know a lot of these things that are required to take a product to market, and it makes it a lot harder. So in our last few minutes, I want to get back to the four legs of the value creation stool, where what you say in the book and the case that you make is if you're not doing all of these four things, you fail to do one of them, you'll fail to do all of them. So in our last few minutes here, can you go into detail on what those kind of four pillars of value creation are?
They all line up and you can find them if you think about it in those three higher categories of business opportunity, feasibility, and adoption. They all go in the same direction, right? So you have number one is business, right? You need to be business focused, right? And you need to understand the business domain and where AI has the capacity and the capabilities in order to support business. And there AI comes in, and that's usually the algorithmic, right? The algorithmic part. And you need to support it with the technology. So that's number three. And then you need to have the right data and the data management, and data needs to have the right characteristics. And number five, that's the organizational psychology, or the closely related to adoption, right? Building trust and understanding stakeholder motivation, right? If you build a tool that is wonderful, but it actually reduces the salary, the variable part of the salary of the people that are supposed to use it, there's no way that thing's going to be successful. So you really need to think about why should somebody actually use the tool? And you cannot use the features. You cannot go and say, because it's the smartest chatbot, because I just don't care. Because how does it help me? So how does it help me to do my job? And how does it impact the outcome? Do I have, do I save time? Do I have, do I have a higher salary? How does it all come together? But eventually it's those four or five factors that we all need to focus on in order to drive value. And all of them are important. So now you can play the game and always take one out. You have four out of five, and you realize, okay, you're going to fail. And either you don't have business applications, or you don't understand the full business. So the tools are going to fail. Right. Or you don't do the psychological part, right? So the change management and work on that part, you're going to fail too. We just talked about it, right? Because nobody wants to use it. Or from a feasibility side, right? You don't know how to do technology, and that thing, fails to open and load and, all the time because you were not prepared. Then that's going to fail. The algorithmics, right? It's not accurate. It doesn't really work how we promised it. Doesn't fail, it's going to fail. And then, you don't have the data. You don't have any data. Or you don't have the data at the right moment. Or your data is not accurate. Then you're going to fail too. Either way, you're going to fail. So you need it all. And that's the challenge where we have to, kind of anticipate the problems on the way to value creation. And when we start, and the book is really not about the how to do,
right?
That's how you have to do it. It's really more about, okay, those are the failures we've seen and we've made ourselves. Just try not to repeat them. And then, the less failures and errors you make, the more successful you become over time. Right. And then, we talk way more. We have a whole chapter, a whole part of the book, part two, about overcoming those challenges. And then we have a part three. So where you have in the part two, you overcome all the challenges of one use case. So how do you integrate it and scale it through a organization that has 10,000, 50, 100, 200,000 people? How do you scale an AI initiative? And what do you need in order to make it scalable within an organization? And last but not least, and that's usually what we're talking about, it's about the capabilities, the required capabilities. And when we talk about those, we always focus on technology. But there's two more, and that one is data management, which we usually don't like to touch. Number three is the talent, right? Yeah. So we usually talk about data scientists and the skills of data engineers or data science, software developers, but we forget the other skills that are necessary, right? That the change management skills, the project management skills, the management skills of that initiative, the business skills, and how do they become, like, to which roles do they transition, right? And that can be totally different between organizations, and especially at the beginning to the middle to the end of an AI journey, or let's say the maturity of an organization. Well, at the beginning, you need really full stack developers that can go end to end. And, you know, you try to find that golden egg, the people that can do everything, right? To the point that when you go and look at the big achievers, they have 1,000 people. They're in small little buckets and are linked to each other, right? One has a very specific narrow job, which we try to optimize. And is that the best approach? I don't know either. So it's like, it must be something in the middle, because at the beginning, it's hard to get those golden eggs. And it's really hard with that very specialized and narrow system that's created when organizations are more mature to adjust or to be flexible. So there's advantages and disadvantages.
Well, so you heard it here first, CDOs. Not only do you have to be good at, you know, business and understanding the business, understanding, you know, potential value you're going to deliver, you also have to be good at technology. We already knew that. But you also have to be good at kind of some of these kind of interpersonal issues. And that, to me, Michael, that's the big takeaway for me is understanding kind of some of the political environment that you operate in, understanding some of the kind of the interpersonal issues. Power dynamics are even relevant here, of like, what will building this AI-based solution do from the perspective of me being perceived as a threat? Like, if this is meant as a way to automate jobs, right? Will I be perceived as a threat? And if I'm perceived as a threat, it could be it could be the greatest AI ever made, and it doesn't matter. It's not going to be adopted, and it'll just sit on the shelf and rot. So I really appreciate these perspectives. Thank you so much for sharing them with our community. If you are not already subscribed to the podcast, please consider doing so. Michael, thank you. Really appreciate you coming out.
Yeah, it was wonderful. Thank you very much. And Nisha, Will, and me, and all the contributors, we like to learn. We're very curious. So if somebody has a different opinion or a different examples or has a different experience that they would love to share with us, we would love to learn and see. You know, it's a moving, it's a dynamic field. So we're very excited about the feedback and people that come, and, you know, you can reach us on LinkedIn, and there's a website to the book, and you're welcome to, contact us and tell us what you think and help us to improve.
Check out Secrets of AI Value Creation, available through Wiley available through Amazon.com. I definitely recommend it. Again, thank you so much, Michael, and I hope to see everybody on another episode of the CDO Matters podcast sometime very soon. Thanks all. Bye for now.